Welcome to another episode of This Catholic Life, conversations about life's ups and downs, big and small, how we deal with every situation imaginable, whatever life throws at us, but still manage to be sensible, practical, and joyful. Today's show is a little different. I had the opportunity to join the Immaculata Long-Term School of Mission and teach them for a few days as part of their long-term mission program. This is 10 young people who came together this year, and this is a project that goes every year, but this year 10 young people came together and are training themselves up for mission and doing some mission together. I spoke to some of the participants and the people in charge about why they do this and what they do.
Catherine is one of the participants, is that right, of the Long-Term Mission School. How many of you are there?
Oh, there's 10 of us, five men and five women.
10 in the school. Was that deliberate or did it just pan out that way?
Just panned out that way.
So it's a nice symmetrical number. Now, I've been here teaching you for 3 days and it's been an absolute delight, but where did this come from? Like, did you start? You didn't just start when I turned up. You've been going for some time. How long have you been going?
Yeah, so we've been going since August the 15th, the Feast of the Assumption, we started. We started down in Tasmania all together. We've been receiving a lot of faith formation for the last seven weeks.
Right.
And now we've been on a mission trip.
Right. You're on a mission, and as part of that mission, you've come to convert me. here I am. I've been very blessed to come and share with you some of the scriptures, which I'm delighted to say you've all been very attentive and interested, which is nice to see in students. But I'm amazed that you guys are already ready to run off. Like, we have to finish early today because you're running off, and for the listener, you can hear clanking in the background. That's all of us eating our lunch, and we're doing this at lunchtime because we're just kind of cram all this stuff in. And when I looked at the schedule with Mother, I realized how much you're cramming into this so-called long-term school. So how long does it go for? Like, how long will this whole experience go for?
So we'll be going until about mid-January.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Most of us are leaving Sydney today to go and head off on more mission.
More mission. So what does that mission mean?
Right. So we'll be going, some of us will be going off to Queensland.
Okay.
To go into some schools and parishes.
Okay.
Others of us will be heading back to Tasmania to go and do a university retreat.
Right. So when you say back to Tasmania, that seems to be the place where, well, not seems to be, it is the place where the Sisters of the Immaculata, their home is. What is it called? The Mother House? Is that the right word for it? And that's where they're all based. But these missions seem to have gone. Is that right? You've gone all over Australia in various times.
Yeah, so a lot of the east coast of Australia we've done.
Right.
So we've been to Melbourne, we've been to Canberra, we've been to Orange, and we've done some things at our school in Sydney, and we've also been to Albury and Brisbane. We've actually been to Brisbane already, so we're actually going driving back to Brisbane.
Wow. Wow. And now you will have lots of prayer time if you're driving to Brisbane.
Yeah, 4 or 5 rosaries probably.
Fair enough. So what brought you personally to the mission school? I mean, it's not something you just wake up one day and go, you know what I need? I need a mission school. So obviously you met someone and there's an invitation there.
But yeah,
who invited you and what made you say yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people had been inviting me to the short 10-day January mission school that the sisters run, commonly known as the Immaculata Mission School, since about 2012.
Right.
And I'd said no every year because it hadn't worked out for me.
Right.
Things just lined up so that I did end up going this past January.
Right.
And I loved it. really transformed.
What is me. If you had to pick two things that are the reason you love being here, what are they?
About being on long-term mission school.
The short-term one.
Yeah. Probably the amount of prayer that we get. You know, you sit at the feet of the Lord for long enough and you actually really, you can't help but to start hearing him.
Right.
I just remember the whole atmosphere of the school is full of love and joy and everyone feels very, very welcome. It's like, you're there and you're part of the community. You don't really have to break into it. You're just there. That's wonderful.
And what about the work you do? You talked about mission. What does that actually involve?
Mm. So lots of different things. Sometimes we'll do parish missions. So that could be there was one parish that we went to where we had mass and we did the music at the mass, and then afterwards we had a lunch and we prayed the rosary together and we had a talk. Other parishes we've done a mercy night, so that's, it could be a meal, possibly followed by again a talk, and then some adoration time, some led adoration and confession.
Yep.
Which we've had a lot of fantastic responses at. And then we'll also do missions in schools.
Right.
So we would go into schools and we would run kind of like a retreat day or a retreat session for maybe one or two periods.
Right.
And that's often, some games and a teaching and a testimony, maybe some music or prayer time. So, yeah.
It obviously involves local parishes, local priests, local schools. How do you, do they invite you, or do you have to choose and sort of seek them out and maybe sit on the doorstep and say, please, please let us in?
So we've been running these long-term mission schools for this is our fourth one.
Right.
And so the first year, I think we were looking for places, but in the last couple of years, people have actually come and approached us. So our mission in Orange, we were there last year. I met a priest. We met this priest on a train going to Katowice, I think, in World Youth Day in Poland.
In Poland, right.
And the young people were playing mafia with him.
Right.
and then he re-met us again at an ACYF, and I think I must have talked to him about the long-term mission school, and he invited
us. Right, what's ACYF, sorry?
The Australian Catholic Youth Festival.
Okay.
So when it was in Sydney,
yep.
I met him last year, it was the year before.
Now, I taught in Sydney in something that I thought was a mission school a long time before 2012. So when was that?
That was a January mission school.
The January mission school when it was in Sydney, but that was some time ago.
10 years ago.
Good grief.
No, it's longer. That was the January mission school.
But that's not the same as this. That's the short-term mission school. Right, okay. There you go. So the short-term, does the long-term team get involved in the short-term mission school?
They do.
Right, so they're a part of the actual running of the show.
Yeah.
Right.
So after they've had 5 months of formation, they help facilitate it.
Yep. So the long-term mission team get involved in the short-term mission school, and which your mission, ministered to and grace has come through the long-term school, but then you pass them on to the short-term school. So how many people would have been involved in short-term schools over the years, do you think?
Quite a few thousand.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's the numbers this year? Do you know yet, or...?
No.
No, we just... The past one was 250.
250 last year?
Yeah.
Or rather this year, isn't it?
Yeah. And so we just hope... We hope we get a few more, actually.
Right. Yeah. Well, 250. Now, where is it this year?
Toowoomba.
Next January coming. Yes. It's in Toowoomba. And so if people want to get involved, they look for the Toowoomba one. Now, what about you? Who am I talking to here?
You're talking to Sister Mary Emanuel.
Sister Mary Emanuel. What brought you into this particular community? Because I think I knew you a little bit before you came here.
Yeah.
And you were involved in all kinds of things, different things. And what made you settle here? And what's especially about this school that's you think is the best thing about the school?
Okay, so... I did meet you before I became a sister, Peter, and... during that time, even though I was involved in all these other things, I was very much involved in the Immaculata. And I think it was through the Immaculata that I found my faith. I was always a practicing Catholic, but really when I was 15, I went on a World Youth Day pilgrimage with the community as we were beginning. And during that time, we had our preparation consisted of prayer time, basically. We did 4 hours of adoration each week.
4 hours a week, okay.
So it's like a readathon or a spellathon. So we had a prayerathon.
Okay. Did you have sponsors though? That would make it a readathon.
Yeah, well, we were meant to have sponsors. I think I raised $50.
Right, okay.
I don't know where it went now. But I think your mother was really smart, so she got us praying each week, and in that time I really encountered Jesus as my best friend.
Right.
And so I think that just, that changed my life completely and set me on this trajectory of wanting to know his will for my life and wanting to know and wanting others to know this great love that I encountered.
Yep.
And so in 2011, I became a sister. So,
right.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, that the first step is always, was it the initial vows or something like that? And then
posthumously first.
Posthumously first, then the bishop, and then you've taken permanent vows now?
I've now taken permanent vows. So I had 5 years of temporary vows, and now I'm in, final vows.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is really awesome.
Yeah, it is really awesome.
Well, we were talking about it just before in the lesson, that this is one of the ways in which we can give ourselves spousally, because you have given yourself as a bride of Christ, as an icon of the whole church and their relationship with Christ, which is a wonderful thing. But let's get down to the specifics of this school.
Yes.
So what's so cool about this experience, this long-term mission school?
Well, I have to speak about it from a leader point of view,
okay.
Helping run it. I think one of the best parts is actually seeing each young person that comes on this school really have an amazing encounter with God and have their life transformed.
Right.
And just also seeing them grow in that confidence of being that child of God and just what can happen when you just entrust your life to the Lord and just... Yeah, let him be the one that leads and guides. It's incredible. And I remember last year we had this young man who was the most, well, actually the whole group was very shy, but this particular young man, he couldn't talk. He found it very hard to be in social settings. And no one really thought that he could, I guess, do much. Anyway, so he came on this school because he felt called, and how he got there was a bit of a miracle. So as he was going through the school, he's really growing in love for God and growing in confidence. And at the end of our mission trip, he was finding it really, really hard. We started off with a retreat in Bolo Farm for Wilcannia Forbes Diocese, and he found it very, very hard and didn't know how to sort of interact with the young people.
So the kind of things he found difficult there were that he had to actually talk to people and get engaged with them and talk to them about quite difficult things like, is there a God, that kind of
definitely.
Thing. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, that's fair enough. I have difficulty with that occasionally.
Yeah. And, anyway, so I remember... one of the leaders had to sort of talk him through it. And at the end of that retreat, he gave his testimony. And the whole, because no one had heard him speak, like the whole retreat. And when he gave his testimony, all the young people, including the person that was running the retreat in the diocese, were like flabbergasted by what he had to share and how he shared as well. And I think it actually gave a lot of hope to those young people too, because even the most shy person or the most...
Wow.
A person who lacked confidence could actually, through the love of God, could actually step out and be vulnerable and open up his heart.
Because a testimony is a sort of a story of how he came to know God.
Yeah.
And that story, stories are powerful. That's why, by the way, we're all interested in saints.
Yeah.
Because saints' stories, I mean, we know all the theory and the theology of the church, but when we see it lived out in saints' lives, it becomes, hey, I can do this, or it can be done.
Mm.
God has worked this wonder in that person's life, but it's even in some ways more powerful when a guy who you normally wouldn't expect to have come up with anything as amazing as that, has, you can see the grace of God in their life. That's a pretty cool story.
I was going to say, and actually, that's one of the things that each of the long-term mission schoolers do. They write their testimony.
Right.
On mission, often when they go into school settings and stuff, they'll be sharing their testimony with young people. And,
right.
Sharing about how, God has touched their lives. And often it's a really, I know for a lot of young people, it's something that they can really relate to, connect with, and just sometimes it's amazed, wow, you believe in God? That can actually happen,
yes. And you're young and you don't look you're a weird person. You actually look normal.
Yeah. And what's also amazing, I find, is how the Holy Spirit works. Because we went to a school this year And we kept getting someone on our team to share her testimony. And she hadn't finished her testimony. She was still writing it.
Right.
On the school retreat day. Anyway, I found out later, because her testimony is all wrapped around the idea of suffering because she had an illness for a long time in her life. Anyway, I found out later that we had a share group before this testimony. And in the share group, so many of the young people were asking, were basically like, you know, if there is a God, then why is there suffering in the world? And they were just kept asking this question of suffering. And then she gives her testimony. And I didn't know this at the time. When I found out afterwards, I'm like, wow, that's the power of the Holy Spirit. Like, he knows exactly what these young people need and what they want to know. Like, no one could have set that up.
Yes. That's one of the biggest questions, I think, these days. There's so many people who are suffering, not necessarily physical things, although they are sometimes, but often there's a growing epidemic of mental illness and depression, anxiety, and quite a lot of suffering. And young people almost scared to ask the question, like, where does this fit? Also, they think they're weird because nobody else is like me and no one else suffers in this way, and I'm too scared to tell everyone what's going on inside my head because they'll think I'm a freak or something. And it's the testimony has the power to bring them out into a place where God can heal them. That's a pretty awesome thing. All right, let's hear from someone, one of the participants. So who are we talking to now?
My name is Will.
Will. So what brings you here, Will?
So actually, yeah, I'm from America originally.
And you heard about the Immaculata and you just had to be here. No, there's obviously a longer story than that. So tell us some
part. Right. So I had a conversion back to the Catholic faith a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Through the ministry of Word on Fire.
Word on Fire. Now, is that Bishop Barron?
Yeah, Bishop Barron.
Okay.
And then actually right before that, like, time, I was doing this program with the U.S. government, living overseas, doing volunteer work in Morocco.
In Morocco?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
what were you doing in Morocco?
I was essentially doing youth development, doing different projects in, like, a small community to help their community, and working as an English teacher.
Okay.
In a youth center. And, yeah, so it was actually a really difficult time for my faith because I didn't have any churches to go to.
Right.
The closest one was 5 hours away.
Wow.
So it was quite a struggle. But, yeah, after that, I really wanted to do something, like, to help my Catholic faith because I suffered spiritually.
Right.
So I was looking into different programs, but it was really crazy because this program kind of found me.
How did that happen?
That happened after I finished my time in Morocco. I got onto a plane to meet my uncle because he was doing a tour in Madrid and he had an extra spot on his tour, so he invited me. And I went to Madrid, and then as I got to the airport, someone came up to me and they asked me, "Oh, do you speak English? Do you want to split a taxi?" And this was at 12:30, so after midnight.
So someone talking to you in a strange country after midnight is not always the best way to meet people.
Yeah, but I did want to save money because it was an expensive taxi. And when I got into the taxi, we started talking, and this person had just finished the Camino de Santiago.
Oh, right. That's the pilgrimage that goes all the way through that central part of Europe.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, nice. Like, another Catholic. Like, I hadn't talked to Catholics for such a long time, so I was so happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, are you Catholic? And she was like, yes. And then we started talking more and more. And she is Jess, one of the leaders of this mission school.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were doomed. There you go. That's a great story. And you're obviously from America. Is the plan then that you go back to America, or are we going to cunningly keep you here?
Well, I'd be really keen to study Hebrew with you at Notre Dame, but...
Just did we get that on tape? The Hebrew. So, yeah, that would be, we'd be delighted. But how would Hebrew, this is an interesting thing, how would Hebrew relate to mission? I mean, you're talking about Morocco and they're learning English there, which everyone can understand why English would help them. Talking about the pilgrimages and mission school here, but why would Hebrew be a desire as part of your spiritual journey?
Ooh, I learned Arabic.
Right.
And yeah, actually living in the Moroccan culture really helped me to see a Middle Eastern culture and what it might have been like more at that time that Jesus existed. Because before meals, they always break bread and they share from the same communal dish. You even share the same cup when you drink. So it was like really opening my eyes to the Eucharist and to different things. Just the fact that they're all nomads and they have so much.
And did you learn Arabic there?
I learned it beforehand.
Right.
And then I continued to use it when I was there.
Right, okay.
So I learned the dialect when I was there.
So the Semitic languages are very similar, and therefore the language is often an expression of culture, but it also shapes the culture. So
So,
but why Hebrew? That's a little different.
Yeah, so learning Hebrew, I think just like that, it would kind of open my eyes to see the scriptures in the light in which they were originally written. Just really helping to break it down further.
Good.
Because I love the scriptures.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a small soft spot for them too. that was a bit self-serving, that particular question, because I see the value in Hebrew, and I've been trying to convince you all in the last 3 days that Hebrew is good, but also Greek and all of the heritage that we have that through which God has brought us his revelation. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, your turn to tell me two things that are awesome about this mission school.
So I think I really love the formation of the mission school, going deeper in prayer. So I had more of an intellectual conversion to the faith a couple of years ago, where it was just head knowledge, and I was like, wow, Catholicism is the truth. But that didn't really affect my prayer life that much.
Right.
So learning how to pray the rosary, having Eucharistic adoration every day for 2 hours and just sitting in front of Christ.
Well, and wise one man once said to me that the 6 inches between head and heart are the hardest faith journey. So coming from, it's in some respects, if you're open to it, intellectually you can say, yeah, that's true. But to actually come into the center of your being and to shape you and transform your actions and your habits like prayer, it's a whole different world, isn't it?
Yeah. And then also just growing in holiness, I've kind of realized through this school that that requires a community.
Yep.
You can't really do that on your own because you're just going to be your own judge. But when you have other people around you, they kind of can see where you can grow, and they can call you on higher in holiness.
Yes.
And really point you to Christ in that way, because we live.
That's the wisdom of the scriptures, that God saved a people and he calls people into his people and saves them as a people. And this whole Western individualism thing is actually a heresy. It's wrong. We're not saved just individually. God wants us all saved, but he draws us into his people. It's becoming more radically this is probably getting off the track, but in theologians such as Stanley Hauerwas and N.T. Wright, these guys aren't Catholics, but they're basically realizing, actually, God wants us to be a people first so that we're saved as a people, as a community. That's a pretty awesome thing. Now, who are we talking to now?
Isaac.
Isaac. Now, Isaac, you're a strapping young man. What are you doing in a place like this?
Well, I'm a new convert, so I'm sort of discovering my faith, and I'm trying to learn how to love God in a good way.
That's not something that I often hear from the lips of, how old are you?
19.
It's not what I always hear from 19-year-olds. I want to learn how to love God. There's a little bit more of a journey behind that. So let's go back a little bit, and you can tell me, how did you come to this point?
Oh, well, how far back do you want to go?
I'm not terribly interested in the biology of the whole thing. So let's step forward to when you first started to ask questions that moved you in this direction.
Well, I stepped away from my original faith, which was as a Pentecostal at 15, and I spent 2 years sort of out in the wilderness, if you will.
Was that in Tasmania?
Yes.
So it really was wilderness, yeah.
Yes. So, sleepy town of, 7,000 people. And I got to this point in my life where I knew that what I was doing wasn't what I was made to do, and that in denying God, I was denying the truth.
Right. Okay.
So
where do you go when you have a realization with that?
Your knees, first of all.
Excellent.
I decided that I'd try praying again. And the only thing I really asked in that prayer was for a place to go. And so I sort of decided that I'd go to each service in my area, you know, the Baptist, Presbyterian, etc. And that once I found where God wanted me to be, he'd let me know.
Okay.
I'd been to the Catholic Mass once before, and I just got it as that would be the first one to go to, probably because it was closest.
Very convenient.
Yes. So I went to the Catholic Mass, and during the liturgy of the Eucharist, during communion, I tried praying, and I just felt this really deep peace, and this really, I felt like I was heard, like really heard and cared for.
As in God heard you?
Yes.
Mm. And so I assume you didn't go and check out all the others? Or?
No, I didn't. I kept telling myself, I should really go to the Baptist one, but I just wanted to go back to the Catholic Mass.
Right. There's something the Catholic Church has, though, that's a little bit different to all the others. And you can pray in any building, but what's different about a Catholic Mass?
Real presence.
The real presence. What do you mean by that?
Like the body of Jesus being quite literally in front of you, either in the tabernacle or in communion or in adoration.
Right.
And it just changes the atmosphere.
And from what I've been hearing from you guys over the last 3 days, that real presence is a regular part of every day.
Yes. So we spend a minimum of about 2 hours in adoration.
Right.
Sometimes more.
Okay, so more on your knees.
Yes. Yeah, no, it took a bit of getting used to just spending so much time sort of in silence and just being still.
Being still.
Yeah.
That's not something we're used to, is it?
No, definitely not. Everything is always moving.
Alanis Morissette has a line. Now, this is revealing my age here, but she has a line where she says, why are you so petrified of silence? Here, can you handle this? And then everything shuts down in the song. And then she says, did you think about your bills, your ex, or your deadlines, or when you think you're going to die, or did you long for the next distraction? And she's basically just saying what we all experience. Like almost everyone gets on the train, earplugs in, or anywhere, you know, oh, gosh, silence, stick my head. But when we're with our Lord, there's no, you can't be, well, you can be distracted. That's one of the problems. But the silence and the contemplation, there's nowhere to hide. You're standing before the King of Kings, and it's that's a beautiful thing. What do you think about the adoration? Is it a chore, or is it
I was able to handle when I came to the mission school. I hadn't done much adoration beforehand.
Yep.
And so an hour was fine. But anything sort of past an hour, and I was going, guys, can we leave, please? Like, I've got stuff I want to do. It's something you grow to love.
Right.
And past that, it's something you start to need.
Right.
Yes.
So you grow to love it. Firstly, you can handle it. Then you grew to love it. And then you started to need it.
Yes.
One fellow, a good friend of mine, actually, from another city, called me once and asked me for some advice. And I tried to help him, but I had no advice for his situation. And he said, it's all right. I'm going to commit myself to an hour of adoration a day. Every morning I'll get up an hour early and go to adoration until God gives me an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I called him back about 6 months later, and I said, how did you go with that thing? And he said, you know how I said I was going to have an hour of adoration a day to find the answer?
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about meaning in his work and finding meaning in his life and these sorts of things. And I said, yeah, I remember that. And he said, well, the answer was an hour a day, adoration a day. So in the thing that he was trying to find the answer in, he was trying to pray to find the answer, and the answer itself was adoration. Mm. Prayer with the presence of God, which centered him so well that everything else suddenly made sense. His purpose in life made sense. So I'm delighted to see you're all gathered around the sacrament. But also, it's been really, I have to say, very enlivening and affirming in my faith to hear you all talk about this, because you're all coming from different angles. I wouldn't have picked this. I wouldn't have said it the way you said it, and I wouldn't have had that experience. So that's a wonderful thing. Now, what are two things? Have I already asked you that?
No. Two things. Don't
what are it. Two things that you think are cool about this long-term mission school?
Two things. I think community, living in community, has been a huge benefit to me personally.
So can we just step back a bit, just to, for the listener's sake, you guys all live in the same sort of area. The guys and girls have quite distinct areas, but you're living in community, you pray in community, you eat in community, and you learn in community.
Yeah,
and
so pretty much, we live together, sleep in separate separate areas. And we spend pretty much the entire day around each other.
That could be challenging.
It has its challenges, but it is far more of a blessing, I found, than a challenge. Well, a negative, I would say.
So learning to live with people is actually
learning
a huge part
with
of
people,
learning
yeah.
to live with God too.
I hadn't considered that.
There you go.
Actually, thank you. I think. For me, the thing about living in community is that it means that ordinarily where I would just like do things without much thought for like anything else, because, you know, I live pretty much on my own. I'm living with people and I grow to care about them as my brothers and sisters. And so I want to do things that will bless them and not cause them any harm or anything like that. And it's really just sort of made me aware of the way that I want to live around other people, even in just like the street, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
How we treat other human beings.
Yeah.
Good call. Thank you.
No, that's all right.
Now we are talking to
Mother Mary Therese.
Mother Mary Therese, who I knew in a past life, but doing many of the same things. A long time ago, you had a vision for the Immaculata. And can you tell me a little bit about that story?
Well, it started when I first became a Catholic, and I became a Catholic in England and had a wonderful prayer group and a great little support of, with different people that helped me in my journey. And I was only in England for 3 months. So when I returned to Australia as a Catholic, I looked everywhere for a sense of community, for fellowship, and I would go into parishes and I couldn't find anything. I'd come out of the parish, I'd ask a priest, is there anything? And they would say no. And this
what
was back.
What sort of thing were you looking for specifically?
I was just looking for a prayer group.
Okay, so.
So at that time I was looking for a place where I had come to the faith. Through the rosary, I felt this desire to pray the rosary, and I I had an encounter with prayer which brought about a peace that I hadn't encountered in my life since I was a little child.
Wow.
And so I felt this peace that I knew the world couldn't give, and so that led me to, I had a bit of an experience with the Lord actually, when I was going to help someone in England.
Right.
And so I knew that God was real and I wanted to get to know this God.
Right.
And it's interesting, I knew it was the Catholic Church. So I was an Anglican.
Right.
But I just knew the true church was the Catholic Church.
How did you know that?
I felt it was sort of common sense with the king cutting his wife's head off.
And yeah. You're talking there about King Henry VIII,
perhaps? Where did the church start?
Yep.
Also, I'll be honest, I saw the witness of Catholics in my life that really I saw something authentic.
Isn't it interesting that it all boils down to, in most cases, what we see, how Christ appears to us in other people, and you can see the authenticity of the faith. So you've got this longing for a connection, if you like, with this Christ through the Catholic parishes. You're not finding it, so what's the next step?
So actually I remember saying to our Lord and our Lady, because all my friends were in the world, they were musos or very, very much, there was no faith background with them. And I remember just saying to God, if you don't find anything, I can't stay any longer. I was so lonely. And it was quite a few months. And actually, my Catholic friends said, you're over the top.
You're too Catholic for us.
Yeah, we sort of, a lot of what you think is a bit old-fashioned. You know, you can live with your boyfriend before you get married.
Right.
You can do all these things. That I just, you know, and because I was a new Catholic, that became confusing.
Right.
And I could tell you some terrible stories, but I won't go there, about some people that probably should have known better, but we're really brought about a bit of confusion too.
It tends to happen though when converts come into the faith, even if what they're saying is the Catholic faith. Often if cradle Catholics have become comfortable in a particular thing. Mm. Now for me it's that I kept getting Catholics to try and read scripture and that made them very uncomfortable because they're, no, only Protestants do that. But we'll look at it occasionally and we'll certainly have it in the Mass, but we're, you know, every day you're too extreme, Peter. Whereas in other cases we've heard this moral questions, or sometimes it's just style. Mm. The Catholics aren't used to this style of worship that someone else brings or something. So where did it go from there?
So on the last week when I'd already asked this priest, is there anything, actually he came up to me at the end of the Mass, he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, there's a young man from the Legion of Mary, and you know, so we've got that in the parish, we'd like to go to that. And so I was like, well, I actually came to my faith through the prayer of the rosary, and actually really meditating on it, because I'd never, no one ever taught me the rosary. I was just given a card, and and I remember just spending a long time meditating on the mysteries. So
which
I
is
prayed
kind of
pretty,
what we're supposed to do, isn't it?
So I prayed my rosary a bit slowly, but you know, that's how I really felt Our Lady was teaching me about her son.
Mm.
So,
so that happened through the Legion of Mary?
No, that happened. So I just asked. I was going out with a boy, and he was Catholic, but not really practicing.
Right.
But his mother practiced, and I asked her for she could teach me. She was a bit busy, so she just gave me a rosary card and some beads, and I went away and learned how to pray it myself. So then when I went to help someone in England who was not doing too well, they had a suffering from depression, and she was my only really sort of Christian friend.
Right.
So I went over there to be with her and to support her. And while I was there, as I got to the airport early in the morning, she didn't turn up. And so I was sort of a bit devastated because it's my birthday. It's my 30th birthday. And I spent a lot of many years sort of not really celebrating my birthday. So I was, you know, thinking I was going to do something with someone who I loved, and she wasn't there. So I had a little bit of a cry to myself about a bit. Yeah, I was feeling a bit down. And and during that time, I experienced the love of God. So I was sort of said to myself, I've got nobody, nobody loves me. And I heard clearly in my heart him say, I've got you, I love you. But probably getting off track a bit, but that was the
an important part of the experience, because that then becomes why you go on and do all the other things.
Then I just wanted to know him and love him, and make him known. It just was like that. It was so, I remember just sitting after having that experience, you know, I had to catch a bus for a few hours, and I was just, I had the biggest smile on my face. It was like I just hit the pearl of grape, you know, I hit the jackpot, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, I was like, yeah, it was just, I can't tell you what it was like. You know,
and so you found, this experience then brings you back to Australia, but I think I came across you when you were already at Lewisham there doing some work with...
So, yeah, so what happened was I started in the Legion of Mary, and what was interesting, there was quite a few young people. One girl who had an experience of God, she was doing yoga, and someone was whinging about the Catholic Church, and she was saying, no, you know, they're really good because her, you know, she had an experience where the church put all the siblings through school. Her dad died suddenly. He was a doctor, so they put the church paid, basically they paid for all the education. So she was sort of defending the faith, and then she went back to do yoga, and she was in her position and started, instead of sprouting the things she was meant to, she started saying Jesus. But so then she rolled up a mat and went out.
Right.
And so that she, I found, met her, and I met another young man who had done a bit of a tour around Europe, and I could tell you a lot of stories, so I better, you'll have to cut me short.
Not but, for today.
so he saw the incorrupted body of St. Bernadette.
Right.
He was an Anglican and he became a Catholic very quickly. And so I was in this group in the Legion of Mary, and they were just amazing. And we'd do door knocks together and we, you know, evangelizing together. But then I wanted to know more about my faith, and I heard about a mission school. And so that was back in the year 2000. Around about the year 2000, I did a mission school. And
where was that?
That was actually in Sydney.
Right.
But it was, and it was the first of its kind. Couldn't find anything. I wanted to really know more about scripture and more about my Catholic faith. And I had a very good friend, actually, that he was Opus Dei and charismatic, which is very interesting.
That's an interesting combination.
So he gave me all these great books, and then he tried to steer me in the direction of a few charismatic communities, but I was very reluctant.
Right.
But I remember actually having a bit of an experience in prayer, which I knew it was real, because I experienced the healing love of God. So.
Right.
So anyway, I get to this mission school, and it was made up of mostly Catholics, but there's a few different denominations, and it was promoted in the Catholic Church, so I thought it was completely Catholic. But then when I joined, it wasn't. And they were very, very good, but there was just some things that weren't quite right.
Okay.
So I really saw this need. I saw, and they were wonderful.
Yes.
They trusted in providence. They prayed. We did have the opportunity to go to Mass every day. A lot of them didn't go, but I did.
Right.
And but I saw, while I was there, I'd have pictures of saints on my wall, and they were like, "Oh, you've got dead people on your wall." So there's a lot of theological debates and things like that. And I realized we need something that's really Catholic.
Mm.
And also I saw this need for community.
Right.
That I could see young people were, especially back then, there was nothing around.
Right.
Prior to World Youth Day, there was very little around.
Mm.
And I just could see that these young people were leaving the faith.
Right.
They'd come to a certain age and they'd start going to uni and they'd leave.
Mm.
So I saw this real need to help young people discover their faith, and also a need to support parish renewal.
Right.
So that's how they both came together. I did not think about a community.
Right.
I wanted to support this beautiful old priest who was kind enough to let the mission school start. But when I left, they sort of stopped doing some things.
Right.
That they were doing. So adoration, when I was there, we set up adoration and things like that. But when I left, that sort of fell apart. So he rang me after I did the mission school and said, "Would you come back?" And actually, at the time, I had a couple of other job offers, but I felt peace there.
Right.
And I felt that I'd be able to do... I really just felt called to support parish renewal.
Right.
And I knew the priest didn't have much money, so I said, "Oh God, I've seen these, a lot of Protestants trust in divine providence, so just give me what you can and don't worry too much." And
it's a dangerous question to ask a Catholic.
Yeah, yeah. But he was so wonderful, and he really had the same heart for renewal, and he had a real heart for the youth. So he supported me with just the ideas. I said, "I can't do much. I can set up adoration."
Yep.
We could do a prayer group. I wasn't particularly interested in doing a youth group. I like older people. But Father was very adamant about doing the youth group, and I said, "I'm so impatient, Father."
Yep.
You know, I don't know how to work with youth. But so that's where we started, right at the beginning with
year was that?
That was 2001.
2001. Wow.
Yeah.
In Sydney.
Yeah. So what happened was there was very few youth. Sister was one of the few youth. There's about three. And so I would promote. So I heard about World Youth Day, which I didn't really know much about. I wasn't a Catholic. Didn't
right.
know
yep.
much about what it was about. But I heard that it draws youth. So I thought, okay, Father Michael said, you know, some people have gone, but they come back and they don't always come back to their faith.
Right.
You know, they might, they've paid them to go. He said, so what they need is formation.
Right.
So, and what I thought, they definitely need prayer.
Yes.
So I said, why don't we do a marathon, like a prayer-a-thon? I said, 3 hours a week.
Yes.
And they need to go to a prayer, connect to a youth group. They need to support the, to do, you know, go to the mass.
Yep.
Every week. And so I thought I'd use it to be able to form them in their faith, get them to connect and get young people together so they build a sense of community or relationship within the parish. So these young people, there was a couple of them, and they got other young people. Not all of them were practicing. Some of them were, some of them hadn't practiced in many years.
Right.
Since he was 12, and he was a car thief. And then, so we had all sorts of different people. He was wonderful.
Right.
He had a big conversion. But so we ended up getting 12 young people.
Wow.
And they spent 6 months learning about their faith, praying every week. When I said 3 hours, a few of them said, we can do four. I said, okay.
I remember that.
You were the youngest, but it did happen. And the young people do get a bit, you know, gung-ho.
It's interesting, isn't it? When you challenge young people, they usually exceed the expectations.
Yeah.
They really they love to be challenged in some ways, and they resist it in others. But that was the time I only became a Catholic in 2001.
I was praying for you.
There you go.
I was praying for you.
Some people had told you that there was this mysterious fellow talking to them about being a Catholic.
They did.
Because I was anonymous at that stage to them. But I became a Catholic then, but it was still a confusing time leading up to World Youth Day. Nobody quite knew what was going on in 2005, but it was a big deal. And the whole of Sydney, I think, was transformed, and a lot of Australia was transformed by that. All right, well, perhaps we should start to wrap this up, and I'll leave you with some specific questions. Now that you've had quite a few years now of doing these schools, and why are you still doing them? Is that, what's the core, if we can narrow it down to two things, that what's the core reason that gets you up each year and says, we've got to do another one? Because you've done it now.
I want to see these young people fall in love with God. You see the transformation in their faith, and they are our future. And they need formation. They need good, sound formation. There's a lot of people that know a lot, but they haven't. It's learning how to live the gospel, having an encounter with Christ. And St. John Paul II talks about the importance of having a personal encounter with the living God. So to really help them encounter Christ in the Blessed Sacrament, to help them fall in love with their Catholic faith, and to really grow in virtue.
Right.
And because that's what we need. By this, all men will know you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. So living together, just to really, and help them to develop friendships so that they've got the support. I mean, it's a gift. I always think, oh, we've got another year, and we get to see these young people transformed, and they are a gift.
Yeah. All right. Well, one last question then, because if someone's been listening to this and they think, hey, this school of mission sounds like a cool thing, I'd like to support it, or maybe I'd like to go on it. So who would they contact to do that?
Yeah, so they can contact the Sisters of the Immaculata, and we're on, we have a website, www.sistersoftheimmaculata.com.
sistersoftheimmaculata.org.au
I'm a little, I'm older than everyone else.
We will put the links in the show notes.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your time. And
a real pleasure. As I said, it's a delight to be involved with the Mission School. I've been in, on and off for various times, and sometimes I haven't been able to accept your invitation, and I've always regretted it. But it's been a delight to be here this time, and please keep doing what you're doing. It's obviously one of the ways in which the Church welcomes young people and spreads its net wider so that they can experience the love of Christ in a practical and prayerful way. So thank you.
Thank you for your time, and thank you for your wonderful teachings.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's podcast. If today's show got you thinking or arguing with your podcast device, let us know. You can subscribe to our podcast at thiscatholiclife.com.au. You can tell us what you liked or what you didn't like, or perhaps you'd like to suggest a future show along these lines, or any kind of show you like, at info@thiscatholiclife.com.au. You can continue the conversation with us by joining Twitter, Instagram, Facebook or Discord chats, and find the links to all of these in our show notes. Also in our show notes, we will include links to the School of Mission that we talked about in the podcast. Remember that this is a uniquely Australian Catholic podcast, and we think that's an idea worth getting behind. So tell your friends about it. That's all for now. Thank you for listening to This Catholic Life.